Hey, this is Akshay Nanavati, author of Fearvana.
Hey, people, this is Dean Karnassus. I'm the author of the new Chicken Soup for the Soul book, Running for Good.
Hey, this is Aaron Hale with Extraordinary Delights.
And if you want to learn how to build better relationships,
and if you want to learn how to become a professional connector,
you should listen to
the Build Your Network podcast
with my good friend,
Travis Chappell.
Travis Chappell.
My good friend and my brother, Travis Chappell.
Welcome to the show. I'm Travis Chappell, and I chat with some of the world's top business influencers, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs in order to crack the code of networking. I believe that who you know is more important than what you know, and that your relationships ultimately determine the person that you become. So if you want to learn the new way of connecting, if you want to fill your network with quality people and skyrocket your results, then you're in the right place, because this is the Build Your Network podcast. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Build Your Network. I'm really excited that we're actually doing these mashup episodes again. Before we were doing just interviews, and then we switched to doing the mashup shows and the Freestyle Fridays, and then we went back to doing just interviews, and now we're doing the mashups again. And it's something that I'm really excited about, because we always seem to get really great feedback on these episodes, and for good reason. There's so many just jam-packed gems in these episodes from some of the best guests that we've had on the show. So on this episode, we are talking about mastering mind and body, and we are bringing on three of the most well-known experts in this space to talk a little bit about that. So the first one is going to be with Akshay Nanavati. Akshay is a good buddy of mine, somebody that actually interviewed back in the day on my show, like in the first month or two of the show starting, I was able to interview him, and then we've been able to keep in touch over the years. But Akshay runs ultra marathons all the time. He is somebody that was used a addiction that he had early on in his life to fuel him to really get addicted to the opposite of what he was addicted to in the first place, which was, you know, bad things. He started getting addicted to good things and just went all in on working out and on becoming the best version of himself that he can possibly be. He even went on a 7-day darkness retreat. 7 days, complete darkness, complete silence. I think he got one shake per meal, so like 3 shakes a day, and that was it. So he just does some crazy things. He pushes the limits on his mind, pushes the limits on his body. He's always somebody that I really enjoy hearing from. And we have Dean Karnassus. Dean is just an absolute monster. This guy has run so many ultra marathons and actually won some of the craziest ones out there. If you're familiar with David Goggins and his book, then you'll know what the Badwater race is across Death Valley. I believe it's over 200 miles is the length of that race, which is absolutely insane. And it goes through Death Valley, the hottest place in the world, and then ends up on the peak of this mountain. It's just crazy that this guy, Dean, actually has won that race and then done so many other just crazy feats of just pushing his physical limits beyond anything that anybody really ever does. And such an interesting conversation, which I know that you guys really enjoy. And then the last one is with Aaron Hale. And Aaron was somebody in all the episodes I've ever done on the show. Aaron's one of the only people that I've ever come close to or actually teared up during the interview. Listening to his story is absolutely incredible. He was disarming an explosive device over in, I think, Afghanistan or Iraq, one of the two. And it exploded in his face, essentially. He had to get reconstructive surgery and all these things. Ended up basically going blind after the explosion, and didn't let that keep him down, and started going on all these crazy trips and excursions, and did a kayaking trip down the Grand Canyon. He started climbing mountains as a blind person. And then he had a trip on his schedule to go to Mount Kilimanjaro to climb Mount Kilimanjaro with a few friends. And a week or two before that trip, he contracted spinal meningitis, I believe, through a crack in his skull that happened during the explosion when he was over in the Middle East. And he actually went completely deaf for the next 6 or 7 months. So for 6 or 7 months, he lived in complete darkness and silence without choosing to do so. And the story that he has of coming back from that and the implants that he was able to get, and the business now that he started, and just the way that his life has absolutely thrived in a situation that would obviously take most people out of the race completely. So these are three people that I just really, really respect, to be honest with you all listening. I just respect these people so much, and I can't wait for you to hear everything that they have to say But first, really quickly, if you are listening to this and you want to start your own podcast, definitely something that me and my team can help you out with, head over to travischapel.com/makemypodcast. There's a quick application. And after that application, we'll jump on a quick phone call and see if my team would be a good fit to build out your show for you. So now, without any further ado, here is Mastering Mind and Body, featuring Akshay Nanavati, Dean Karnazes, and Aaron Hale. When do you think it is time to throw in the towel on certain things, right? Because you know, that's persistence and things, they're definitely rewarded. And I'm a very big fan, obviously, with you know, my door-to-door sales background, like persistence is a big part of my DNA. But at the same time, sometimes, you know, you're just doing the wrong thing and you shouldn't be doing it anymore. How do you know when you are making the right decision to throw in the towel versus I should just remain in this and stay persistent?
Yeah, no, it's a fantastic question. You know, I think a big part of it is constantly getting the feedback, the external and the internal feedback, analyzing that feedback. So it's not just, because a big part of it, sometimes what happens is we're running around like a chicken with his head cut off, just, you know, blindly in activity versus purposeful action and exercising the feedback based on constantly getting the awareness, the intel on the situation. So I'll give you a very concrete example. I was mountaineering in Nepal. This was the second time I had been in the Himalayas. First time we made it to the summit, climbed to about just under 21,000 feet. Second time, we were on the mountain and the snow was way deeper than we expected. So, I mean, we were struggling, battling the snow. It started getting late afternoon and we could see avalanche cracks in the snow. And we were like 100 feet, maybe 150, 200 feet from the summit. You could see the summit right there. Hmm. Now, late afternoon, you do not want to be towards the summit, not to mention we're seeing avalanche cracks, right? So now this is a fine line. Obviously, you want to go to the summit, right? But what do you do? So, and here's the thing. I could have made it to the summit and come back alive and, you know, great. I made it to the summit. Awesome. But at this, but you could have kept fighting and then the avalanche could have happened. But you never know, right? The hindsight is 20/20. So we made the call to quit, I guess, to retreat, if you want to call it that. And I have zero regrets about it. Zero regrets that we did not make the summit. So we gather the intel from the environment based on knowledge on, like, you know, what, how, like, I mean, the fact that I was able to read the avalanche cracks, right? Because I knew a little bit about that. I had studied it. Gathering the intel, getting the feedback, internal and external, starting from people who are more advanced than you along the path. So having mentors, having coaches is invaluable on the journey, getting a sense of that. And then, you know, it's, again, it's a fine line. It's like, I mean, this is, you see this on, again, coming back to the mountaineering analogy, you see this on Everest all the time. It's like, you know, that summit is right there. Do I keep going? And if you do and you make it back, you're a hero. But if you do, and then, you know, the other on the flip side,
you don't make it back. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. So I just say gathering that feedback and a relentless practice of self-awareness. So when you're taking action, come back and reflect on that action. It's not just like blind, purposeful action, right? Action, awareness, looking to reflect. And then you got to make a call. There's no sort of right answer. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's a individual path.
Yeah, sure. And I think one big thing too, one big caveat is that you have to be okay with the result, whatever the decision that you make. I think a lot of people get too much in their head afterwards and start this spiraling,
good point.
State of regret, you know, like you could have a totally different attitude about what you just said. You could be like, hey, I regret it so much. I wish we would have just gone to the peak. I wish we would have just gone the extra 200 feet. I wish we wouldn't have retreated when we did. I wish, you know, like you can beat yourself up for the decision you made, but in reality, you just have to look at it and know that, like, hey, I made the best decision with the information that I had.
Exactly.
And if put in the same position again, I would probably make the same decision again. And sometimes you just have to be okay with it and be okay with sometimes maybe it was a wrong decision, you know? And I'm not saying that in your case, I would have done the same thing that you did, but I'm saying,
I feel you.
In general, like, you have to be okay with the fact that, hey, sometimes I'm going to make the wrong decision, but that's all part of the journey. If I could make the right decision every time, that would be great, but it's just, it's not realistic. It's not going to happen.
Expecting
that of yourself is only going to make you disappointed in yourself more often and not happy.
Absolutely, man. Great point. And then just take the lessons and move on, right? Like, I mean, it's that mountain is not the first time I've failed at something. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, and it won't be the last.
One point that a lot of people don't think about is, you know, you said people just get tired and they, you know, they just kind of follow the routine. They get up every morning and they, you know, they shave, they go to the office, they come home, they're exhausted. Physical health really matters, because to set your own course through life, you need energy. you definitely need to be physically fit. I found that people that have their physical health are much more energetic in pursuing their goals. Otherwise, you know, if you're tired and lethargic all the time, you just kind of fall into a rut and just kind of scrape by every day.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, unfortunately, I think live their lives like that. They, you know, they get in the car, it's a horrible commute. You know, they grind it out at the office. They might even be doing well at the office, and they come home, they're just exhausted. You know, they want to have a beer and eat pizza on the couch, and they fall asleep and get up the next day and do that. And I always tell people, you know, start by reclaiming your health. It might be counterintuitive. Like, if I'm spending more time running or some more time in the gym, you know, how is that advancing where I want to go? It's giving you more energy overall. And I think more physical energy, it's going to help you get to where you want to go.
For sure. And I think it builds the habit of improving yourself and doing things, making the difficult choices. Instead of coming home and drinking beer and eating pizza, you come home and drink water and have a salad. Like, that's a decision that you used to make that was bad, and bad for you, bad for your health, bad for your family, bad for your longevity. Like, it's bad in a lot of different ways. And you change that habit from making the easy bad decision into making the more difficult but good decision. And that habit is a habit that will, you know, take that you can take into any aspect of your life, regardless of what it is. And I think the health is one of the most black and white ways to start building those kinds of habits. And since we're talking about this now, I want to get into the running that you do, Dean, because this is really, like I was telling you before I hit the record button, I've been going through David Goggins' book recently, Can't Hurt Me. And the dude just has an incredible story and talks about all the things that he went through before he started running these ultras and doing all these, you know, long races and stuff. And up to that point, you're thinking like, man, how much more physical, you know, turmoil can this guy go through? And then he runs his first ultra and realizes that it's a completely different game, even from like SEAL training and the stuff that he had gone through already. And so when you and I booked this chat, I was really excited to talk to you about this, because it's something that's been on the forefront of my mind recently. Can you talk about a little bit into what was your drive behind like going from running a marathon, you know, 26, 27 miles, whatever the exact number is, and then going into running these ultra marathons where it's literally 100-mile plus races? What was the driving factor, the driving force behind that decision?
Yeah, I think, you know, the company I work with called The North Face, they have a really great motto: never stop exploring. And I had this, you know, I've always had this sense of exploration. And exploration for me is, you know, what is the limit of human endurance? Like, how far can we push our bodies before we break? And so I ran a marathon, as you said. And then I heard about this thing called an ultra marathon. I came across these two guys that were going to run a 50-mile race. And I couldn't wrap my head around it. I thought, hold it, 50 miles? No human can run 50 miles nonstop. And they said, yeah, that's the plan. So I found out where this race was. I thought, I gotta try this. I gotta throw myself into it. You know, I signed up for the race. I somehow finished the first 50-mile race, and this is back in 1992. You know, I have to date myself, but it's it's a long time ago. And so at the finish of the 50-mile race, I see these guys I had met who told me about it, and they're high-fiving, you know, in the finisher's tent, saying, "We qualified." And I'm thinking, you know, you qualified for an insane asylum. I mean, what did you qualify for? I'm glad to be alive. And they said, no, we qualified for the Western States 100-mile endurance run. And I said, wait, 100 miles? Are you serious? And the guy's like, yeah, you run 100 miles. It starts at a ski resort in Lake Tahoe. You run to the very top of the ski resort.
Okay, so this one has been a long time coming, and I'm excited to announce the launch of our new company, World Class.
You know, you run all night. You put on a headlamp.
I've been doing podcast coaching, consulting for individuals and businesses for the last couple of years. Over the last few months, I just haven't been able to keep up with the requests. So in order to serve more people, I've decided to stop taking on coaching clients and start an agency that creates a done-for-you podcasting solution, as well as multiple production and reporting services. So if you are a business owner, coach, consultant, entrepreneur, real estate investor, whatever it may be, then a podcast should be
I actually finished the race. Business
development tool, and it was just such an expansive experience because it went beyond. It transcended running.
Even when you're sleeping,
you know, it was allowed you to connect with big impossible. Yeah, it was a big impossible thing that I somehow pulled off. I achieved it. And those lessons were so influential. They translated into everything that had to do with life, you know, with business, with everything.
Yeah, that's what exactly what I was about to say is like the crazy thing about those races is that
world class.
Yes, it is a lot of physical, but it changes the game from like a marathon where it's like, okay, how much did you train? Are you physically prepared for this? To like those 100-mile races are a mental game.
Just focus on what you do best.
You can't train enough to be like ready for one of those to make it a breeze on race day. It's going to be a mental game the whole time, and that's what I find most fascinating about it. And so from there, this was like 92, 93 time frame, you said?
Are going to be able to absolutely crush.
So from there, can you build out kind of a timeline? Because you've done since then some amazing feats. Running 50 marathons in all 50 US states in 50 consecutive days. Like that's absolutely insane. And then winning the world's toughest foot race, the Badwater Ultra Marathon, and 135 miles nonstop through Death Valley in the middle of summertime. And that's a race that that David talks about in his book as well. And so I know that that's something that's like really, really well known in that world. And you were actually winning that race. So build a little bit of a timeline here for some of these like major accomplishments and just walk us through what the thought process was.
Yeah. So on that same theme of never stop exploring, I finished this 100-mile race and I thought, wow, that was amazing. Can you possibly go further than that? And I learned of this race called the Badwater Ultra Marathon, which, as you said, is a 135-mile foot race from the lowest point in the Western Hemisphere, which is Badwater, which is right in the middle of Death Valley, not far from Las Vegas, actually. And it finishes on the highest point in the contiguous U.S., which is Mount Whitney. So the idea is to run from the lowest point to the highest point nonstop, 135 miles, and they hold the race in July. And it's very, very hot in Death Valley. So you're not only running this extreme distance, you're running in the most extreme elements on Earth. You know, the highest recorded temperature ever on the planet Earth was in Badwater. It was 134.6 degrees.
Wow.
And, you know, people say, wow, you know, it was 100 degrees today and I tried to go jogging. It was impossible. You know, imagine running 135 miles in 130 degree temperatures. And that's the Badwater Ultra Marathon.
You know, soon enough, I was throwing the luggage back in the armored truck our team uses. And I was leaving the airfield and going back out to our command outpost to get back to work. And along the way on the convoy commander calls back over the radio and says, EOD, there's something in the road up here. I want you to take a look at it. And, you know, toss the luggage off of the robot in the back, toss the robot out of the truck. And we got to work.
And tell me like what exactly does that mean? We got to work. What were you doing?
Well, there wasn't much time to switch from vacation mode to battlefield mode. I was right back on the job, and the robot went down and does its, you know, whenever possible, we send the robot down to inspect before we do everything remotely if possible. We don't want to do anything hands-on if we can avoid it. So we send the robot down and it finds what 99% of all the IEDs in Afghanistan were, at least at the time, were these jugs, like oil jugs, you know, 5-liter jugs of homemade explosive with a lamp cord connected to a cheap piece of plywood as a pressure plate and a 9-volt battery. That's it. The robot took the pressure plate and, you know, pulled it away from the rest of the wiring. So it was separated. The switch was gone, but it couldn't get the rest of the IED, the heavy packed dirt kept the real explosive stuck in the ground. And one of our primary jobs, besides, you know, making sure we mitigate the hazard right there, is that we want to collect evidence to send up you know, we've got the whole alphabet soup represented on the battlefield for FBI, CIA, ATF, and we send all of the evidence we can from biometrics, electronics, chemical analysis, so we can, to these guys, so that we can get to the bomb makers, the financiers, all of that before the next IED can get back onto the battlefield.
Right.
So my job was, I had to go get that stuff, go get that evidence. So I jumped out of the truck and I started making my way towards the IED, and about 20 meters from the original IED, a secondary device had detonated and sent me into the sky. I landed on my knees and elbows, the lights went out, and I was still conscious, but I couldn't see. I first thought that my helmet had been pushed over my face. I first did the functions check, wiggled the fingers and the toes, the elbows and knees, and found that everything was more or less intact. So I reached up to fix my helmet to find that my helmet was gone. Wow. And that's when I thought, oh no, this is bad. The Army's going to want that back.
That was the first thought. Yeah. Super concerned about losing your helmet. So talk to me now. Like, did you immediately realize like this is going to affect me for the rest of my life? Or were you hopeful that, hey, maybe after a day or two, I'm going to start getting some of these things back?
I held a loose hope. Eye damage is a nasty thing. They preach wearing eye protection, safety glasses everywhere at all times on the battlefield. No matter if you're going to the chow hall or you're going into a fight, everybody wears eye protection. And man, everything that was on my head just gotten blasted right off. I'd known it was going to be bad. So there was some permanent damage there. I was hoping that I would, be able to see when I got, when the doctors got to me. Within 48 hours, I was at Walter Reed, and multiple surgeries later, the hope was gone. It was dashed. They said, one eyeball was completely gone. The eyelids were even fused together in a permanent wink. And the other eyeball had such a severe gash in it that repair was impossible. Hmm. So blew up both my eardrums. I had cracks in my skull to the point where I was leaking spinal fluid right out of my nose.
Wow.
And I was trying to figure out what I was going to do with the rest of my life. Like, how am I going to be a blind man? How do I do what, how can I be me? A father, be a soldier. It was some tough things to face. And, those demons, in the hospital bed, they try to creep in.
So you now, obviously you're coming home, right? You are at the point where you just don't know what's next. So talk to me about how you were able to overcome something that happened, tragically in your life, and turn it into, you're like the prime example of somebody who turns their mess into their message, turns something that's seemingly super unfortunate on the outside and turns it into something that benefits you for the rest of your life. How do you reframe that at the time? And was there a period of time where you were just like pissed off at the world and didn't want to talk to anybody? And like, did you go through that phase at all? Or was it immediately just like, I can't go down this spiral because I don't know if I'm going to come out?
Well, I definitely realized the peril in going into that spiral and the self-loathing, the self-pity, becoming a victim. And now, that doesn't mean that I didn't have some really awful days.
Yeah.
But I looked at it. It was absolutely the military training. It was without a doubt the support of my family. There were many veteran service organizations and the support of the military while I was injured. But it was the military training that, and that mindset perspective that it had given me, that said that you adapt and overcome. And I in fact, within the EOD, I use this example where every three-person EOD team is given an entire shipping container full of tools, from bomb suits to de-armors to power tools, chemical hazmat, decontamination kits, all everything that they might find as far as explosive hazards go on the battlefield, we have a tool for it. And then we get sent the team and our shipping container to the battlefield, and we get this armored truck. And the armored truck, we got to figure out what we're going to fit in there, because we can't get the whole shipping container in there. So we got to leave some tools behind. So we pick, of course, the robots, the bomb suits, and a few other things we can shove into the nooks and crannies and boxes all around the truck. But then in Afghanistan, most of the patrols we were doing were on goat paths that we couldn't bring any vehicles. So now we've got our rucksacks. What can we fit on our backs? And usually it was some C4, some rope, maybe some carabiners and grappling hooks. And then we got to bring water and our food and ammunition. And that's it. We got to do a job with just some C4 and some rope.
Yeah.
So now I'm missing a couple of tools. Yeah. And I still have to be a soldier. I'm still active duty until they let me go. I'm a father, I'm a brother, son. There are all these roles that I still have to play. I can't give up. I have to carry on.
Yeah, that's amazing, man. I just want to acknowledge you before we move on for taking something like that and turning it into, a career path that you've now taken. So, talk to me now about the business. So like you get home, you realize, I can't just roll over. I can't go down this spiral. I can see where it would lead and I don't want to be in that position. And like you said, I still have these roles to fill, right? I'm still a father. I still have these other things that I need that I'm taking responsibility for in life. So, I'm just going to focus on being a dad and I'm just going to collect my disability check? Or was it more just like, I got to do something to occupy my mind. I want something more than just living. I want to produce and make a difference in people's lives. Like talk to me about that whole thought process and what eventually led you to now what you guys are doing with your cooking company.
Right after I gotten out of the hospital, Walter Reed, I went to blind rehabilitation at the VA hospital, where they taught me how to use the cane, accessibility things, talking phones and computers, and I learned how to be blind. But then, kind of being released into the wild, now I've got to go use my new skills and prove that I can carry on. And I was so terrified of being stuck on the couch or stuck in the house and being sorry for myself and being, popping pills or, being one of those terrible losses, suicides we have with our military and our veterans. So I may have overcompensated. I started climbing mountains, running marathons, whitewater kayaking, and anything I could do to really get out of the house, but it just success built on success. I found that I could do these things. And what happened was I was connecting with others that had already gone this way. Blind people like Eric Weinmayer, who's the only blind person to ever climb Mount Everest. If that guy can do that, I can get out of the house. I sought him out. I climbed a mountain with him. Yeah. Just a couple of weeks ago, I climbed another one with him. I found Lonnie Bedwell, the first blind person to kayak the entire Grand Canyon. And you know what? I went kayaking with him. And these are
it's like literally the definition of the blind leading the blind. But in this case, a solid way of going about it, right?
Absolutely right. Well, I was at the during this time, I was also speaking, and I was telling my story, and I was telling them about how it's all about perspective, I was finding success through challenging myself. It wasn't despite struggle; it was because of the struggle that I was growing stronger, more confident. I was growing my network. I was I was making more friends. And I was adding value to other people's lives.
Well, that's it for today's show. If you want more advanced networking strategies, as well as an instant network upgrade, then consider partnering with my BYN Inner Circle Mastermind. There are already dozens of high quality entrepreneurs in the group. There's dozens of video lessons on networking. There's monthly calls, there's accountability crews and more, all for the low investment of just $99 a month. So head over to BYNinnerCircle.com to jump in. That's BYNinnerCircle.com. Thanks so much for joining us on today's show. We'll see you next time. Remember to leave every relationship better than you found it.